This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
White House on the clock. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Monday, October 19. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is warning that for a coronavirus relief bill to pass before Election Day, an agreement needs to be in place by tomorrow night.
President Trump and rival Joe Biden are pushing familiar messages. Hear what each is saying from the campaign trail.
Daily coronavirus cases have fallen below 60,000, but 42 states are showing signs of increased spread.
And the looming public school funding crisis, with more kids being homeschooled.
You know, a lot of families understandably are pulling their kids out of public school this year. Remote education is hard to handle, especially to balance with work. But what that means is that when states calculate how much they're going to fund public schools, they're looking at a lower enrollment number, which means less funding.
Jillian Berman at MarketWatch on the ripple effects of remote learning. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the White House has 48 hours to reach a deal with Democrats on coronavirus relief legislation. Otherwise, she says it'll be hard to pass a bill before Election Day that would provide aid to struggling American homes and businesses hurt by government restrictions.
They took out 55% of the language that we had there for testing and tracing. And the tracing part is so important because communities of color have been disproportionately affected by this.
She was on ABC's This Week. If tomorrow evening passes without reaching an agreement, negotiations could continue, but the election could create new political uncertainties. President Trump on the campaign trail.
I want to do it at a bigger number than she wants. That doesn't mean all the Republicans agree with me, but I think they will in the end. If she would go along, I think they would too. On stimulus. So let's see what happens.
President Trump recently said he could support even more than the White House's latest $1.9 trillion proposal, though it isn't clear Senate Republicans would get behind it. With Election Day 15 days away, President Trump is planning to hold campaign rallies nearly every day until then. He's in Arizona today, Pennsylvania tomorrow, and North Carolina on Wednesday. Yesterday, he spoke at a rally in Carson City, Nevada.
Joe Biden is, and always has been, a corrupt politician. He always has been. And as far as I'm concerned, the Biden family is a criminal enterprise.
Mr. Trump's rival, Democrat Joe Biden, has a less rigorous schedule, with campaign aides indicating concern over big rallies that could lead to the spread of the coronavirus. Mr. Biden held events yesterday, including one in Durham, North Carolina, and a virtual roundtable discussion with black faith leaders.
Although God says everyone, Jesus said everyone's redeemable, so far he doesn't have much social redeeming value in terms of what he's teaching our children. They're listening.
Their second and final head-to-head debate, by the way, is later this week. A slowing after a recent surge of coronavirus cases. New diagnoses in the U.S. fell below 60,000 on Saturday, the lowest number in 4 days. Recent infections had approached the numbers not seen since the peak in July. However, despite the decrease, 42 states showed signs of increased spread, and hospitalizations reached their highest number since late August. Data from the CDC indicate that Midwest states yesterday accounted for 5 of the 10 states with the most new cases in the last 7 days, with Illinois ranking second behind Texas. Illinois Governor J.D. Pritzker.
I am deeply concerned. Let me be clear. We are in a new wave here.
Officials at Northwestern University, just north of Chicago, said Friday they had traced a cluster of COVID-19 cases among its business school's full-time MBA students to multiple large gatherings last weekend. Classes are now remote beginning today. The 7-day average for new cases reported daily was higher than the 14-day average, again for 42 states. 10 minutes now after the hour, on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Monday. It's been a full year since House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and President Trump last spoke to each other. Christina Marcos, congressional reporter at The Hill, says the anniversary of sorts underscores the historic level of dysfunction and discord between two of the most powerful people in Washington. Christina, explain.
It's entirely normal for the president and speaker of opposing parties to clash in public and to be at odds with each other routinely. But at a minimum, they've always been on, at least on speaking terms, and sometimes they even had warm personal relationships behind the scenes. Whereas whenever Pelosi and Trump have crossed paths, it's almost always ended in disaster, and it's shown that far from being able to try to notch any sort of legislative deal together, it's clear that the two can barely stand each other.
Wow.
And that just underscores the nature of American politics right now, where both sides are so entrenched in their partisan positions and they have more incentive to play to their respective bases than to try to deal with each other.
Remind us of a couple of those disasters.
Well, most recently, the last time Speaker Pelosi and President Trump were even in the same room together was in early February when they were at the National Prayer Breakfast. And this was right around the time that the Senate voted to acquit President Trump in the impeachment trial, and President Trump said that he doesn't like people who say they're praying for you when they don't mean it, and that, of course, was an implicit dig at Pelosi, who had often said that she prays for the president. And 2 days before that was the State of the Union, where President Trump appeared to snub Pelosi's attempt at handshake, and then at the end of the speech, she ripped up a copy of the speech that was in front of her.
What had she done to set him off? Was there something before that precipitated the handshake thing?
Well, the State of the Union was actually the eve of the Senate vote to acquit President Trump. And adding fueling the tension at the time, of course, was impeachment, which Pelosi presided over. And their last in-person meeting a year ago, October 16th, 2019, was just a few weeks after the House had launched its impeachment inquiry. And so that Pelosi and Trump had always been on tense terms. It wasn't the first time that they had a blow up in a meeting when they tried to meet together. But once the House actually set off with impeachment, their relationship became completely beyond repair.
Boy. We're speaking with Christina Marcos, congressional reporter at The Hill. She's written a piece about the 1 year anniversary in which President Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have not spoken. What have outside observers say about this? And I mean outside of, say, the Trump and Pelosi camps.
Well, lawmakers that I talked to said that they frankly think it's a sad commentary on the state of our governance right now. That the president and the speaker aren't even on speaking terms. And you see it with the coronavirus relief package that the Trump administration and Speaker Pelosi have been trying to, and Senate Republicans have been trying to negotiate for months now, and they still haven't been able to reach an agreement despite the fact that all of these relief measures, like enhanced unemployment benefits for people who've been impacted economically by the pandemic, they continue to suffer while the two sides are unable to reach an agreement. And as we get closer to the election, it seems increasingly unlikely that there's going to be really any political incentive for the two sides to reach a deal before then.
Yeah. Is it unusual that a president would dispatch somebody like the Treasury Secretary, in this case Steve Mnuchin, to do the negotiating on the White House's behalf with the House Speaker on something like stimulus?
Not necessarily. I mean, there have been presidents who would dispatch relevant cabinet officials for negotiations with Congress or key staff members to hammer out specifics of legislation. But what is unusual is for the president to essentially be never involved directly in any sort of in any legislative negotiations, and for and to be unable to even interact directly with one of the congressional leaders.
Thanks, Christina. Christina Marcos, congressional reporter at The Hill. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's calling on the White House to show it's serious about reaching a deal on another coronavirus relief package by moving within 48 hours to reach an agreement on the remaining disputes. After speaking for over an hour with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin Saturday night, Pelosi put a 48-hour deadline in negotiations that have stretched on for months, but didn't say what would happen if the deadline wasn't met.
Number two.
President Trump implored supporters in Nevada to cast ballots early in a state he narrowly lost in 2016.
If he comes in, Carson City will become a ghost town, and the Christmas season will be canceled.
Number three.
Democrat Joe Biden urged North Carolina residents to go vote today as he criticized Trump's handling of the pandemic.
Turn the corner. Things are getting worse. He continues to lie to us about the circumstances.
Both candidates preparing for their second and final head-to-head debate Thursday, slated for Nashville. Damage estimates from a rare windstorm that slammed Iowa and some other parts of the Midwest in August are growing, with the total now at $7.5 billion. The August 10th storm hit Iowa hard, but also caused damage in Illinois, Ohio, Minnesota, and Indiana. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says it's the second costliest U.S. disaster so far in 2020, although cost estimates for widespread wildfires along the West Coast are not yet available. Beijing is threatening to take Americans in China hostage if the Justice Department doesn't drop its prosecution of several Chinese research scientists arrested in the U.S. soil this year. The Wall Street Journal reports that Chinese government officials have repeatedly warned their U.S. counterparts that Americans in China face being detained if its demands are not met.
Tonight, this time he hits the ball to deep right field.
The call on Fox is the Dodgers came back from baseball's abyss to capture Game 7 in the NLCS, beating the Braves 4-3 to move on to the World Series. And they'll take on the Tampa Bay Rays in a series that starts tomorrow night.
On the golf course, the Atlanta Braves are going to be snapping clubs over their knees in disappointment and
there.
Frustration
yes,
over
they were ahead.
Up 3-1. Thanks, Jen. If you're looking for a special gift for someone this holiday season, something truly unique, I've got a great idea. An original hand-painted portrait from PaintYourLife.com. At PaintYourLife.com, you can send any photo or combination of photos, and a world-class artist will transform them into a beautiful portrait at a truly affordable price. I recently had a portrait of our kids done. It's incredible. Now hangs prominently above the fireplace in our den. Taking less than 5 minutes, the order process was a breeze, and our painting arrived in about 3 weeks, packed and handled as if it were the most delicate item ever shipped. At PaintYourLife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded. And right now, as a limited-time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. To get this special offer, text the word DEAL to 64,000. That's DEAL to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Text DEAL to 64,000 for PaintYourLife.com. Thanks for joining us. Besides wearing a mask on an airplane, there's one thing you should definitely do if you are traveling this fall or over the holidays, and that's use your miles. A survey of pandemic award prices finds airlines are making award seats available at very cheap prices in miles or points. Scott McCartney, travel writer at the Wall Street Journal, says first-class seats, which give you a bit more social distance on board, are a particularly good value. Scott, what's trending?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, by and large, you can find good deals for cash on air tickets, but even better deals on frequent flyer miles. This was a survey of different travel dates in November, including Thanksgiving travel days. And United, for example, economy ticket in United's 10 busiest markets averaged 12,800 miles. Similar, same survey done in a different time period in 2019, but also a mix of slow days and busy days, found United's average was 25,000 miles, which historically has been the price of a domestic coach ticket. So half the price. It found great deals at other airlines, particularly good deals on first class at American. And I think what's going on is that airlines are sort of desperate to find ways to make their frequent flyer program relevant when nobody's frequently flying. So the traditional perks that you get out of it, early boarding or no check bag fees or whatever, for most people, that's irrelevant. And so I think they figure we got all these empty seats. If we can get some people back traveling, maybe get them more comfortable with traveling, but make them feel like the frequent flyer program still gives them value, maybe they'll keep using their airline credit card. And airlines really need people to keep using the airline credit card because they've borrowed billions and billions of dollars against the loyalty programs.
We're speaking with Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "Airlines Pitch Frequent Flyer Mile Deals to Travelers Wary of COVID." Given that we're still in a pandemic, does it make sense as a frequent flyer to go somewhere just to go?
It's a really difficult choice, and I think that's why we see so little travel. We have seen some uptick in travel. After 7 months, people are so cooped up that they do want to get out. There are more destinations that you can consider, you know, getting a house in the woods near a national park, very much changing travel patterns. With more testing, you can now go to Hawaii if you have a negative test within 72 hours before of a test that's prescribed by the state of Hawaii. They only accept certain tests. And they check people when they arrive, and there's you know, but you can avoid the mandatory 14-day quarantine locked in a hotel room if you go with that negative test. Well, that's really attractive to some people. So I think with the testing, you're going to see some pickup. You know, first of all, there's no business travel, so you sort of take that off the airplane. For many people, you can fly, but when you get there, everything's closed. So what's the point?
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
The information you need and the truth you demand. Start your day with America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us, and welcome into Monday, October 19. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says an agreement on coronavirus stimulus needs to be in place by tomorrow night to pass it before Election Day. Air quality alerts in parts of Colorado as wildfires continue burning. China said earlier today that its economy grew 4.9% in the third quarter, 6 months after being hobbled by the coronavirus. Monday Night Football, 2 games. Chiefs at the Bills, Cowboys hosting the Cardinals, and a heartwarming moment at a high school football game in South Dakota. That story in about 20 minutes. Tense times for public schools right now. A funding crisis looms since public school aid, often is connected to enrollment, which is declining this year as parents look for alternatives to remote learning. More from Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch. Jillian, what's happening?
Public school funding is tied very tightly in most places to enrollment at public schools. And so, you know, a lot of families understandably are pulling their kids out of public school this year. Remote education is hard to handle, especially to balance with work. But what that means is that when states calculate how much they're going to fund public schools, they're looking at a lower enrollment number, which means less funding.
All right. So you took a look at the Savannah area. What's happening there?
Yeah, so in Savannah, they basically, you know, when they received their enrollment, they found that it had dropped by about 700 students, and about half of those students should be in kindergarten, and basically they speculated that parents were continuing to send those students to daycare or preschools, which were in person, while Savannah had started remotely. So they, you know, kind of rushed move towards a hybrid model in hopes of getting more of those kindergartners to enroll in the public school by providing them a little bit of an in-person option.
Jeez. All right. So the school, I think you said, is looking at losing better than $1 million, right? Can't they make the case to the county or to the state about, you know, they need an exemption of some kind or an exception?
So some Savannah, they didn't say whether they were kind of trying to make this case, but some, you know, kind of superintendent associations in various states are trying to make the case to lawmakers that we should look at a different funding model this year than, you know, than what we've done historically. So instead of basing, you know, so much of next year's funding on this year's attendance, maybe we can look at, you know, an average of attendance over the past few years,
yeah,
or maybe just not even taken into account at all.
Boy, all right. So what are they doing in the meantime?
So, you know, school districts are sort of preparing for the possibility of cuts. I talked to a superintendent in Indiana who, you know, he's trying to figure out ways that they could cut without, you know, kind of infringing on the educational experience, but he is prepared to, you know, to have to work with teachers to make cuts as well. So, you know, basically they're just preparing to spend less.
We're speaking with Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called "With Families Turning to Pandemic Pods and Homeschooling, a Funding Crisis Looms for Public Schools, Especially Those Who Base Funding Based on Student Attendance." And with a lot of kids staying home, the same attendance is not what it was, for example, last year. So this involves a lot of kindergartners, right? And from a kindergarten standpoint, it's kind of okay to skip that year as long as you're back in for first grade. Or not skip it, but I mean, do something from home.
Yeah, so I think a lot of families, particularly of young children, are saying, you know, to the idea of trying to log on to Zoom with my five-year-old at a specific time is, and for a specific amount of time, is really not feasible, especially if I work. So yeah, so a lot of, you know, parents of young children, I think, are saying, you know, is there a way that either we can do this asynchronously, so that means, you know, they complete some kind of online work, you know, in our own time, or yeah, they're saying we're going to homeschool, or, you know, we might try to go into a pod and hire a teacher, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So for some of these families, though, I guess once you start with homeschooling and find it works, they may never go back to a traditional school district.
Yeah, so it's hard to say. I spoke to the head of a homeschooling association, and obviously this year they've seen a huge increase in interest. Homeschooling, though, it's almost a movement. So a lot of people who have traditionally homeschooled their kids, they're not really trying to replicate what you'd get in a typical school setting. But a lot of, you know, parents who are doing this at least temporarily are trying to replicate what's normally in school. And so once school becomes available, you know, typical school becomes available, they may just go back.
Thanks, Jillian. Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer at MEDC, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, what are Michigan's best selling points?
The biggest selling point for Michigan is our pure Michigan quality of life. We also have a diverse and abundant workforce and a business-friendly environment that we think is unmatched. It's also very connected to global supply chain assets. And through a comprehensive suite of programs and services, we can help businesses grow here in this state and also help provide access to our highly skilled workforce, where we have the highest concentration of engineers and some of the greatest skilled trades talent as well. Here in Michigan, we make things, and we think we can be the convergence of technology and manufacturing, and there is no better place to bring your idea or product from concept to reality than here in Michigan.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from MEDC, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, when you buy a new home, you can find all kinds of surprises lurking in the cracks and crevices, usually of the unpleasant variety. A couple in upstate New York, however, made a surprisingly boozy discovery in their home, a bootlegger's supply of whiskey. They also say that upon further inspection, they found hidden compartments with more bottles dating back to the 1920s stashed away. In all, Nick Drummond told Fox News they found 60 bottles of the stuff so far, with more compartments still to open. Drummond says that they were told by a neighbor that the home was rumored to have been built by a bootlegger and a German baron, but they never really thought the story was true. He says they've started an Instagram account called Bootlegger Bungalow to document their finds and get tips on solving the mystery of their secret stash.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Super cool. And again, probably the best thing that you could find, right, in the walls of your house, because you know all kinds, you know, a house that's that old,
right?
You know, you can find all kinds of things. And amazing that no house inspection over the last 100 years or so has uncovered any of this, right?
I guess they don't find secret compartments. They just basically check the structure of the house, make sure there's the water runs, there's no leaks and stuff, right?
I suppose so, but I mean, there's you know, not a lot of digging going on here.
Is that
all
drinkable? I guess I'd like to know.
Yeah,
or is it rotted at this point?
I don't. I'm not an expert, but I'm sure someone's gonna give it a taste.
I'm gonna have to follow Bootlegger Bungalow on Instagram and find out. It's kind of neat.
And Gordon, I know you have this on your calendar, but for everyone else who might not be aware, next month will be the 8th anniversary of Mark Sanchez's infamous butt fumble from the Thanksgiving 2012 Jets game against the Patriots. And as we approach that comical milestone, the Jets had yesterday what could turn out to be the highlight to their dismal season, a butt pick, with the team down 24-0 to the Dolphins. Defensive back Marcus May tried to intercept the Dolphins' pass, juggling the ball before falling to the ground, rolling over, and trapping the ball on his derriere while it was hoisted in the air. Social media couldn't help but immediately make comparisons between the two butt-related plays. One Twitter user called this the butterception and theorized that the universe for the Jets has finally been balanced. Another user summed it up succinctly, writing, "The butt giveth and the butt taketh away."
So true. This could be the turning point.
This is it.
This could be the end of the 8-year jinx of the butt fumble. Now they get a buttception or whatever they call it. The interception with the butt. And that could be the jinx reverser. I'm just saying.
Someone was saying, you know, now they're going to wind up like drafting Trevor Lawrence with the number one pick. And now it's going to be all, I mean, it can't get any worse, right? It obviously can't get worse. We think they've scraped the bottom of the barrel. So, this could be the turnaround.
You lose 24-0 to the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And then you get the butt reception. I think this is it, Mike. I think things are happening.
I mean, you need something, right? Some kind of divine intervention,
right?
Because just, you know, plain old football smarts is not really doing it at this point.
And my son poured salt on the wound yesterday by saying it looks like the Jets really could go 0-16.
Oh yeah,
and I think
it's. I think the,
hate to admit it.
I might have to put a few bucks in on that. To be honest with you, at this point.
Goodness gracious! Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
For the ones working tirelessly to keep their coworkers safe, For the ones rising to new challenges. For the ones rebuilding stronger than before. Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry. Free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, and 24/7 support. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Monday. The hottest vehicle in America is the Ford F-Series pickup truck, at least when it comes to stolen vehicles. Fox News says the full-size truck topped the National Insurance Crime Bureau's 2019 Hot Wheels list of most stolen vehicles. The annual ranking compiles stolen vehicle reports submitted to the National Crime Information Center. Of the 39,000 F-Series ripped off, the 2006 version was the most common. Last year's number one model, the Honda Civic, finished second on the list with 33,000 thefts. But the 2000 Civic was the most stolen vehicle overall with 4,700. Chevrolet's full-size pickups rounded out the top three with more than 32,000 trucks reported stolen during the year. But when combined with the 11,000 GMC pickups that were taken from owners, General Motors ends up in first place with nearly 44,000 vehicles stolen. The Honda Accord came in fourth with nearly 31,000 thefts that year, with 1997 being the most popular year. Fifth place belonged to the Toyota Camry. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
New coronavirus cases in the U.S. fell back below 60,000 on Saturday, the lowest number in 4 days after a recent surge in which daily infections approached the outbreak's July peak. But 42 states are showing signs of increased spread, and hospitalizations reached their highest number since late August. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker spoke with CNN.
On a statewide basis, we haven't looked at increasing mitigations, but as regions flip over and need these resurgence mitigations more and more, we may end up in a situation where a majority of our regions, or even all of them, are in these resurgences.
10 states, including Idaho, Minnesota, New Mexico, and North Carolina, marked records on Friday for the number of confirmed cases.
Number two.
The difference between the legislative meaning of the word shall and may are what's keeping House Speaker Nancy Pelosi from signing off on the stimulus package she has spent months negotiating with Republicans. Pelosi told ABC the word may gives the president what she called a slush fund, and certain parts of the package are non-negotiable.
They took out 55% of the language that we had there for testing and tracing. And the tracing part is so important because communities of color have been disproportionately affected by this.
Asked if she was any closer to reaching a deal with Republicans after speaking with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin for over an hour on Saturday night, Pelosi said she was seeking clarity. Early voting begins in the crucial battleground state of Florida today, as a record 28 million Americans have already cast ballots. President Trump will visit Arizona today. Challenger Joe Biden will spend the day at his home base in Delaware, while Senator Kamala Harris heads to Florida. Hundreds of thousands of acres in Colorado continue to go up in flames as firefighters battle several wildfires throughout the state, including one that has been burning for over 2 months. The Cameron Peak Fire is the largest recorded wildfire in Colorado's history, and has burned over 203,000 acres and is 62% contained. As indoor entertainment venues continue to struggle, AMC Theaters has come up with a special offer for moviegoers looking to see some of their favorite films on the big screen. The chain offering rentals for an entire theater starting at $99, capped at 20 people. There are 17 movies to choose from, including recent releases like Tenet, as well as classics including Monsters, Inc. and Shrek.
Okay, that was fairly clever.
Yeah.
Nothing else going on, really.
Exactly.
Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. High school sports had another of its magical moments at a high school football game in South Dakota. Brady Sprick, a paralyzed high school senior playing for Platte Gettys, was put into the team's final game last week against Gregory. Mr. Sprick, who was left paralyzed from the waist down after a car accident, checked into the game during the fourth quarter. With the ball at the goal line, Mr. Sprick got help from his teammates to get out of his wheelchair and was guided into the end zone as he slowly and deliberately moved one leg in front of the other. Even the opposing players cheered as Mr. Sprick stepped across the goal line with the ball tucked under his arm and a referee blowing his whistle for the score. The Argus Leader newspaper in Sioux Falls says Brady has had a long road to recovery since breaking his back, the top bone of his mouth, and all but three of his teeth. In 2017, after months of rehab, his mobility began to improve,
and the possibility of him getting out for a play in the football game began more of a possibility. How about that? For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.